Welcome to the Northern Affinity Video Podcast. During this session, we will be having an unedited discussion with an expert. And what I'll be planning to do is, during our discussion, get them to teach me something. Teach me about something that's of interest, but also they are an expert in. I'm Michael Edwards, and I'm the founder of the Northern Affinity. And I will tap into our wonderful community to bring you along on my drive for self-improvement and my desire to learn. So please connect with me on various social media platforms, whether it's LinkedIn or Instagram or Twitter. And I'd love to hear from you what subjects you'd like to learn more about, or what subjects you think it'd be good for me to learn about. So please, you know, get in contact and let me know. All the details will be in the show notes, and you can send me an email or contact me by the various platforms. I really hope you enjoy the show. So I'm delighted to welcome Mark to the podcast. So welcome, Mark. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Mike. It's good to be here.
Oh, my pleasure. And for those who've read the kind of headline, and or if you're watching online, can see that today we're going to talk about the psychology of closing sales, which obviously there's lots of things to unpack there, and we'll go into that in a minute. But I think a good place to start is, do you want to just give us a quick introduction, Mark, on who you are and what you do, and that probably, again, frames the conversation nicely.
So I'm Mark Endicott. I'm the managing partner of the business consultancy firm Endicott Associates LLP. We're a business consultancy firm that covers all manner of standard business consultancy, project management, one-to-one business mentoring, but predominantly the biggest thing we do is sales training.
Excellent. So I think let's kind of cover this subject to start with, the psychology. What do we mean by the psychology of closing sales? I suppose before teaching people about it, what do we mean by it? What is it?
So basically, and I'll frame this by saying I haven't got a psychology degree. I'm not good enough at writing essays to ever do some kind of wordy degree like that. But it's more about the human psychology that is behind decision making when it comes to purchasing, and also the bigger issue is this, like how as a person you would get over the hump of asking somebody to part with money for a product or a service. So it's the psychology on both sides of that coin that I really want to talk about today, because it's easy to kind of be an order taker. It's easy when people come to you and say, oh, I'd love to buy this. Oh, fine, fantastic. I'll sort that for you. The hard thing is to actually go out there and push people and encourage them to say yes. So that's kind of more where the psychology of actually closing sales comes in.
Yeah, and I guess this skill is, I mean, it's always needed, goes without saying, but especially in times where, so we say tougher economic times, and obviously what we've kind of experienced over the last few years, and people are probably a little bit more careful about their buying decisions. So therefore, I guess getting this part right probably means more than it ever does right now. Would that make sense?
Yeah, I would agree with that. So, I mean, obviously, kind of just post-pandemic, we had a bit of a boom where it was really easy to sell things. You effectively could just be an order taker. You could go out there with product at X price or service at Y price, and people could come to you. You know, they've got the spare money because nobody went on holidays, nobody was buying cars because they weren't available. So, you know, as the climate's changed economically, and thankfully we've avoided a recession, but it has changed. So it's becoming more and more prevalent that you actually need to go out there and convince people to part with that money. And the biggest obstacle to overcome with that is actually building up the confidence to say, you want to give me your money for this product or service because of X, Y, and Z, and justifying that parting of cash effectively.
Oh, absolutely. And I think you touched on there, there's two elements to this, isn't there? There's the buyer and the seller, I guess, in basic terms. Should we start probably with the buyer? What kind of things do we need to be thinking about when it comes to this?
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of this, you can kind of frame early doors in a sales conversation, So depending on how many meetings, how many conversations you have to have to reach the point in which you can ask him for an order, it's kind of a case of in that last meeting where you're going, okay, I've had my introductory meeting with them. I might have had a second meeting with them where, you know, I really pitched the product and they came back with some objections, said, okay, let me think about it. I'll come back to you with any more questions. That third meeting where, you know, they're hitting you with the real questions, you might have had to chase them to get that third meeting in the first place. But then as they're coming to that point of making a decision, there are little things you can do, such as there's the rule of like five yeses. So if you can get somebody to say yes five times throughout a conversation, their brain is in a positive mindset. They're more likely to say yes when you say, okay, can we put you down for X amount of this product? Or when can I book you in for this service? So there are little things that you can do along a sales journey with a potential customer or client that can really get them in a buying mindset from the get-go.
Yeah, and I guess it's that idea, isn't it? You touched on an example of a question is, rather than do you want my service, how many of my service do you want? Now, it's obviously not a foolproof way of getting it, but if you've got that positivity going, if it's there's essentially momentum to the conversation, you know, it's going your way, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of things. And again, so, I mean, I've spent the last kind of 10, 12 years selling, managing salespeople, training salespeople, coaching salespeople, who are actually, you know, their job is salesperson, as well as the business owners and the, you know, directors who aren't from sales backgrounds, who also need that kind of coaching. Even like hardcore salespeople, a lot of them never actually get round to asking for an order. So they'll just kind of leave it there. And there may be loads of buying signals coming. So they might be saying, okay, so if I was interested, how long would it take? Or when can I book onto your course? Or when can I buy such and such product? What's your delivery times like? What financing options do you have available? You know, people ask these questions. They're clear buying signals. And it's basically them saying, ask me to spend my money. And the number of people who just overlook that and completely miss that is unbelievable. But you've also got to be careful not to go too far the other way. So I've had, in the past, I've had to have quite difficult conversations with salespeople that worked for me who, you know, they took some training on board around, you know, it's important that you have to ask for the order. And then they'd go out and first meetings with clients be asking for the order 2 minutes into the conversation. Like, okay, you know, you need to pump the brakes and know when to ask for the order as well. It's not just, so when can I put you down for this? No. That you've got to time it right and wait until you've built that relationship. You start to see some of those buying signals coming from the buyer.
So why do you think people don't ask when they should?
Yeah, so this is probably the biggest thing that I certainly see and I come up against when I'm doing training, is the psychological block that people have within themselves. So, you know, you get some hardcore salespeople who it's not a problem at all. I'd like to think that I'm one of them. I very rarely have an issue with saying to somebody, okay, so when can we go ahead with this? But for some people, it's a psychological block around the actual money aspect of it. And it's a concern and a question of whether they feel like they're actually offering value for the amount they're trying to charge for something. So, you know, you want to go and buy a car that's, say, £100,000. You've got to exhibit that car is worth a lot more than somebody who's going to go and buy a car that's £20,000. So it's about understanding that side of things as the salesperson. But also, for me, I think the biggest block is people don't seem to grasp that they've put the time and effort in to building that relationship. They've put the time and effort into, you know, pitching that product, handling objections. They've every right to ask for that order. You know, the whole reason that you've put that time into that relationship, and the person buying knows it as well, the reason you've put that time into them is because you want their money.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've just got to kind of almost get over yourself a little bit, accept that everybody knows that this is where this whole relationship's been heading down. You just need to bite the bullet and actually commit to asking for that money. It's a real psychological hump to get over. But once you've done it a few times, 5-6 times, you know, you start to get in the groove, you start to get used to it. You've got to be able to handle rejection. That's natural in sales. But you have to understand that when they're rejecting that, they're not rejecting you, they're rejecting that it might not be the right time, or perhaps your offer just isn't exactly what they need right now. And there's always potential for the future. So there's nothing wrong with asking people to pay money for your time, for your service, for your product. That's why your service or your product exists.
I think it's interesting you just said there about the kind of the rejection piece, actually, and people fearing rejection, I suppose, is in a brutal way, is when it comes to people who are running their own business, you know, there might be just them, and so they are the salesperson. Do you think there's that reluctance to ask that question more? Because if they do get rejected, they do take it more personally, whereas if you are employed in a sales role, you can kind of detach the two things, can't you? A lot easier. It's a lot easier naturally, whether in reality or not, but naturally to do so.
Yeah, I think it is less personal. When you're employed, it might be that they're just rejecting either the company you work for, or they're rejecting the offer that company has right now, and a pricing structure that you've probably had no input into. When it's your business, your product or service, and your pricing structure, and they say, no, it's not for me, you know, they are effectively saying either you're not for them, or the price point or the offer you've put in front of them isn't for them. Now, you'd like to think that if you've done your due diligence and followed the right kind of sales process and sales pathway, that you'd have filtered those kind of people out earlier on in the conversation before it came time to try and close a deal. But, you know, sometimes that doesn't happen. Sometimes people really lead you on a merry dance and they're that close to committing. And then you get to the point where you ask them to, and then they go, no, it just isn't quite right for me. And everything else that they've done has indicated that you've nailed what they need. So it is more personal when it's your own business, but that doesn't mean that you don't ask for it. And that doesn't mean that you don't have the right to ask for an order, and doesn't mean you don't have the right to go chasing those leads down. You know, there's common things that you'll read and that you'll see where it says, like, you know, it can take anywhere from 7 to 15 interactions for somebody to buy from you. You've just got to think, you know, I think the stat was you have around 350 interactions with marketing before you have your breakfast. Like, if you think when you wake up,
it's a lot of noise.
If the first thing that you see is your phone, well, that's a branded item. Then you put on clothes that will probably have a label in them somewhere, and every item of clothing might have a different brand. You go brush your teeth, your toothbrush, your toothpaste, you know, your dental floss, your toilet roll, everything is branded. And then you sit down for your breakfast. You might have made a coffee with branded coffee and milk. And, you know, there's so much going on that people have to understand, kind of, that people are so used to having these things put in front of them. You've really got to try and stand out when you are selling them something directly selling.
No, absolutely. And I was just thinking there about kind of, I guess, the flip side of this argument about confidence or momentum. And I've seen it, you know, I've worked in sales jobs previously a few years ago now, thankfully. But I see it when I'm doing what I do now, is you kind of get on a roll. You know, you get one or two, you win pieces of business. It seems like all the other pieces of business that you thought you were going to come in, and obviously vice versa. Is that a confidence thing, do you think? Is it the feeling happy enough to ask the question because you feel like you're more likely to get a positive response? What's your kind of thoughts around that?
Yeah, so again, there are some interesting studies around that a couple of business schools have done on kind of quite high-level salespeople in quite expensive premium goods and luxury items, where, you know, if they close a deal, they will quite often close another 3 or 4 within 5 days. And that's purely down to the fact that one first deal, it almost has a domino effect of they then go, hey, you know, this is what I said to that guy that worked. I'm going to go and try it again. And they might try it again on 20 more people. And the percentages that work out mean it works on 4 or 5 more of them. So it's the little things that, yeah, it gives you confidence, but you also learn from it. So when somebody, like, for example, if you sell your most expensive offering, so say, you know, I sell my most expensive sales training option, which is a one-on-one full day with me, you know, that's going to be a great feeling. And then I'm going to think, okay, how did I close that where I might not have closed it with the last three people? How did I close it with this person? What was the wording I used exactly? You know, what was it that triggered for them? Now, that might not trigger with other people, but it's always important that you make note of these things. I mean, I've got little black books littered all around from every sales job I've ever had, including like my own businesses now, that are just full of people's like details of kind of the things that they respond positively to, the things that make them kind of recoil a little bit, just so I know, you know, if I want to reach back out to this person in 6 months and see how they're getting on and see if there's any opportunity for us to do business in 6 months' time where either we've done it before and it worked and it was right to give them a break, or, you know, they said no and they gave the reasons for saying no and it was something that I couldn't overcome at that point in time. In 6 months' time, I'll go back to them knowing full well, you know, I've changed my offering to accommodate their needs, or they might have changed circumstance to fit within a different offering that I have. And it's always about not being scared. It's so easy to just be fearful of, you know, well, I might upset them and then they might tell other people that I don't know what I'm doing or what I don't know what I'm talking about. Or, you know, it's not going to happen. You just need to be confident that, you know, if you are in business for yourself, for example, there's a reason you're in business for yourself. You're normally going to be an expert in your field. So trust that, value that highly as well. It's really easy to think you're a good salesperson when all you're doing is selling the cheapest option on the marketplace. So people are taking it because it's cheaper than everybody else. You know, put your prices up and then see if you're a good salesperson.
Yeah. So from I mean, obviously we've touched on it a few times, but a lot of people who listen to this or watch this will be people, business owners who are doing their sales. And you said there about not fearing, and I think that's great. Is there things that they can do to make sure that when it comes to the, obviously, you know, specifically to talk about closing the sale today, things they can do to help themselves get over that hump? Is there different things that you would advise them to do?
Yeah, I mean, practice is always the first thing. It's the same in any walk of life. You know, if I wanted to get better at playing the piano, I would practice, and I would have to practice a lot. When I was younger and I was learning how to play, I had to sit there and practice every night. Otherwise, I would never have been good enough to pass the next grade exam or to actually be able to play the piano. It's the same thing in sales. You know, you can practice on potential clients, but you run the risk of losing them. I would suggest practice on colleagues, peers, friends. If you're in a networking group like the Northern Affinity and there are people in there that they're not your ideal candidate, reach out to somebody and just say, you know, you're not my ideal client, so I don't want you to buy from me, but I would just love to practice pitching to you, practice my closing techniques on you. Would you be interested in that? You know, there are loads of different methods you can use for actually closing. So, you know, you've got the, this is a limited offer that's going to end in a week, you know, your time pressure closing style. You've got the, there's only so many left closing style. You've got the more relaxed, you know, well, you know, if you're interested, that's great. If you're not, I get it. But, you know, I'm sure you are. So shall we go ahead? Quite relaxed about it. And then you've got the more pushy, right, so how many can I put you down for? And it, you know, there's loads of different styles. So practice them, see how they feel, depending on what it is you're selling. If it's a product or a service, different approaches will work better and worse for that product or service. And different approaches will work differently with different people. So find people within your network that you can practice on who aren't going to take it personally when you're bombarding them with pitch attempts. And, you know, can we jump on Zoom for half an hour so I can try and sell to you my product, even though I know you don't want it? And it's, you know, you need people to be quite critical with you at that point. Once you've done that and you've practiced and you're confident enough, then it is literally, you know, a case of going out there and doing it. There are people like myself, there are lots of like sales training people out there. Reach out to them and find out, you know, if they run courses about closing, if that's where you have difficulties, or opening, if that's where you have difficulty. Some people, the introduction's the hardest part, you know. Actually try and learn some tips and tricks. Try and learn some techniques that might help you get over your psychological barrier, because as with kind of everything in life, if you do have like a bit of a mental block around something, the easiest way to get over it is just to have a technique. It's like, you know, if I'm having a bit of a panic about a stressful situation, I have a bit of a, right, I'm going to remove myself from it. I'm going to go for a walk and take a deep breath a few times. And then when I come back to it, it's different. Same thing. If I'm having difficulty getting over the hump, if I'm in the middle of a conversation and I'm like, right, I need to close. How am I going to do it? I often think of, there's a scene in the US version of The Office where one of the salespeople, Andy, who is trying to close a room full of people, and his boss, Michael, is literally is in the room pretending to be one of his clients. And he's like, yeah, you know, so if any of you are interested, you've got my details. Thanks for coming. And Michael stands up, takes him out of the room and says, you need to close these people now. You need to do it now. Just ask them. Just ask. You know, sometimes it takes somebody else having to say that to you. You've just got to have that in your own head. You know, get in your own head and say, just ask them. There's nothing wrong with doing it.
Absolutely. I think what you say about practice there is really important as well, because I my experience of anything like these kind of essentially role play type scenarios is they are often the hardest, worst versions of what you can do, which sounds ridiculous because they don't matter in any way, shape or form. If you can do that, then the actual real life situation is significantly easier. It's a bit like, I remember reading something before I did my wedding speech about basically stand yourself in front of a mirror and present it to yourself. Because if you can do that and look at yourself doing it, that actually just looking out of the room of people who want you to do well is significantly easier. It's a similar kind of idea, isn't it? That is the worst case scenario almost, doing it to someone who you know.
Yeah, it's so awkward, particularly like if you've said to them, look, I don't want you to buy anything off me. I just want to practice this with you. You know, it's no different. I'm sure everybody kind of hates those situations where you're in a room doing a group training and then they say, right, get into groups and we're going to do a role play. And you think, oh, everybody just cringes inside because there's nothing worse. But the reality is the reason group trainings do that is because that is how you will get better.
Absolutely. I'm on to just something just popped into my head actually while we talked about it. I might have mentioned this on a previous podcast actually around sales, but this is very much around the psychology and closing. Many, many years ago, I worked at a business and we loved the team. We used to come every month to the monthly meeting and talk about the forecast we've got that month. And basically, these forecasts were getting longer and longer and longer, and the same companies were on the forecast every single month. And I remember the boss once said, right, today we're going to have a competition. I think he offered, I think it was 2 days holiday. I can't remember, whatever it was, to whoever can get the most no's from the people on their list. And we won more business. Like, it was the biggest bumper month they've ever had, because it turned round this idea of you had this list of prospects and it was kind of like almost a comfort blanket. I like that they're there. But people weren't asking the question, as you touched on earlier. And kind of what you're saying earlier reminds me of this is, you know, actually stop having things on your plate, get rid of them as soon as you can. I know sometimes things do go on and that's not always possible, but if you change how you frame that, asking that question, it really can make a difference. And it was huge difference to lots. And it stuck with me for many years. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. I had a similar situation in a company where I got given the list. Like, so you had salespeople who they had, like, you know, the same clients that, oh yeah, they're close to being closed. You know, they're nearly there for 6 months. And the boss just said to me one day, said, right, here's a list of every single person that said that these guys, and there was, I think there were 6 or 7 people that they said, these guys have said these people are all close to being closed. They've been close to being closed for 6 months.
Yep.
Ring them. I rang every single one of them, closed like 90% of them, because they were just waiting. They're sat there with their checkbooks open, but they just weren't being asked to part with cash. And like I say, it's easy to be an order taker when the economy is good and people are bouncing. When you've actually got to go out and sell, you've got to understand that people need encouragement to part with their money. You know, we're not selling 50p sweets that are the impulse buy at the supermarket checkout. You know, you're talking about things that people need to put some serious thought and consideration into. And 9 times out of 10, they're not going to be the ones to come to you and say, yes, I'll have it. You have to go and ask them if they want it.
Yeah. And Yeah, and I've seen this many times and been guilty of it myself. I'm sure all of us have to at certain times. But kind of, I guess, lastly, there's probably people listening to this now thinking, yes, I know I need to get better at this. I need to improve. And whilst obviously we can't solve every issue, what kind of maybe two or three kind of hints and tips, things would you say to people as a starting point to get better at this, of being better when it comes to the closing sales and obviously definitely in relation to the psychology of it?
Yeah, write yourself a script for your closing gambit and write yourself two or three versions of it. So if you know that, you know, a conversation is getting towards the point in time where it's either stick or go home, you know, like, are they gonna ask you if they can have it? Probably not. So as you're getting towards that point where, you know, oh, we're gonna wrap up and I'm gonna have to say, oh, I'll speak to you in a month, just have something written down that you're gonna go read it off, see what they say. You know, that's always gonna help, is just to have it written down. Tweak that, adjust it accordingly as things work and don't work. That's the first thing I'll say, is just to have it written down and then adjust it. Then beyond that, understand where they've come. Like, so when you talk about like sales funnels and things like that, and as they work their way down the sales funnel, if you've got to the point where you're asking them for an order, they must have worked their way fairly well down. Bounce back to some of the things that they've touched on. You know, what were the things that encouraged them to reach that point in their sales journey with you? What were the specific pain points your products hit for them? What were the things that attracted them to your offer? And remind them of that as part of your closing gambit. You know, there's the classic. So you've told me that, you know, you have issues with your car servicing plan. Well, if I told you that we could take care of your car servicing plan for a monthly payment that is affordable for you for the next 12 months, your car's going to get serviced. You're not going to have to worry about big bills on tires, big bills on oil changes, or anything else that goes wrong. And I can do it for you for X amount per month, and we can start tomorrow. How does that sound? You know, tick off those pain points, but finish with, how does that sound? You know, finish with a question that they have to say, you know, yes or no. Finish with a closed question. And those kind of little things are going to give you a lot more confidence going into closing a deal. But you need to make sure that you have answered some pain point or hit some desire that they have. Because it's not always a pain point. Sometimes it is that they actually just actively desire and want what you want. Like, luxury goods are the most common one for that. So it's about just making sure that you remind them of what it is that's attracted them in the first place. If you can do that, and again, that can be part of what you've written down, and that'll obviously change from customer to customer. You know, you write down their specific issues and then you word your script around that, rattle it off to them, and just give it a try.
Makes sense. And I'd always add on, what's the worst that can happen? The worst that can happen is they say no, and all you've done there is saved yourself time. That's not necessarily... I know that's it's easier said than done, but I think if you get into that mindset, okay, well, you know, because you're not going to win them all, are you? Nobody closes them all. No matter how brilliant you are, how brilliant your service or product is, no one can win them all. And I think once you kind of realize that kind of helps as well.
Yeah, 100%. Like, you know, I train this stuff, I teach this stuff, and I probably have a 40% closing rate across my career. You know, you don't win them all. In fact, you're going to win less than half of them, no matter how good you are. Yeah. It's about understanding that, like you said, all you're doing is saving yourself the time, effort, and stress of thinking about the people that you haven't yet closed, because you've tried, and if you failed, you know, you can write them off and move on to your next prospect.
Absolutely. I'm just thinking about it then. I was going to ask the last question, but I'll just think this. And there's probably no other walk of life where we actually go in almost desperate to never fail. Because, you know, if you play sport or you play a computer game or whatever it is in your life, you do things, you don't expect to win every single time. That's the fun of it, is that you win sometimes or enough, and you try and get better at it. And I think there's this kind of, almost when it comes to sales, there's a bit of a psychological block around that wouldn't be there in other walks of life.
Yeah, and again, particularly, as we said earlier, with business owners, because they feel it's a direct reflection on their business and on them themselves, it's not. You can't take it personally. You know, at the end of the day, business is a numbers game. The more prospects you have in your funnel, the more, like, so if you can close at a 40% click rate, the more you will end up closing by having a bigger funnel. You know, you've just got to open it out and try again and try again and try again. And if you get focused down on, oh, you know, I've got these five potential people, all of them look really good. Okay, what are you doing beyond those five people though? Because you might only close one of them. So, you know, you need to find another 50 people beyond those five.
Absolutely. Well, that's great, Mark. I think there's a lot of really interesting stuff to go out there. And I guess it's probably, I'm sure people will have their own kind of questions and thoughts and ideas around this. If they want to kind of get a hold of you and find out more, where's the best places to look and to go?
Yeah, so LinkedIn is 100% the best place to reach out. I mean, it's literally linkedin.com/Mark-Endicott. That's me. I'm also, I don't know if you're happy with me putting this out there, but I'm running a webinar at the end of June.
Please do, yeah, put it out there. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, ironically, talking about the other end of the sales process, actually where you can research and identify some potential prospects, the free tools that I use for doing that. That's on the 29th of June. So again, if people look me up on LinkedIn, they'll find a link to that as well. But yeah, no, it's really good talking to you about this, Mike. I think it's something that, you know, people don't understand that there is a lot of psychology involved in sales. It's not just, you know, people either want it or they don't. There are things that you can do that will motivate people to part with money along the process, and it's about how you maximize that.
100%. And I'll put the link to the webinar in the show notes for this. So if you, whether you're listening to it by podcast or via YouTube as well, I'll put the link in so people can go directly to there. So they're not going around the houses. Makes it a little bit easier for them to get.
Thanks,
there.
Mike. Real.
So yeah, just finally for me, thank you for joining, Mark. I really enjoyed that conversation. I feel like there's actually a lot of these areas we could look at. Might be a few more of these podcasts we can look at different areas, but no, I really appreciate it. So thank you.
No worries. Thanks, Mike. Cheers for having me.
I hope you enjoyed this chat today, and like me, you learned something new from our wonderful expert. So if you'd like to hear from more of our sessions, please subscribe on whatever platform that you get your podcast from to hear more. And also, we'd love to meet you at some point at one of our upcoming events. We, the Northern Affinity, hold events all across the north of England, and we'd love to meet new people and have guests along. So please come along and check out our website or all the details in the show notes. Thank you very much.